Okay, well, thanks, Mike, for leading us so well this morning. Appreciate that. If you have your Bibles, if you'd open to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. While you're doing that, here's a tribute to those of you who love swamp people. All two of you. My boys and me, we lived in these here woods for nah 50 years. We used to live pretty good on all them deer we took, but now the game's pretty darn scarce. There's still plenty of fish in the river yonder, shad and carp and maybe trout. So today we had us a parley, me and my boys. We're going to hang up them rifles for good and we're going to live off the river. If we dry the fish, I figure we can make them last the whole winter. So it's a new life starting now. Today we're going to build us a Shadrach in the meat shack and then to bed we go. Apologies for the really, really bad accent. First Corinthians chapter 9. Paul says this in verse 19. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law but am under Christ's law. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all means I might save some. And I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. This poem is called The Song of Right and Wrong. Feast on wine or fast on water, and your honour shall stand sure. God's almighty son and daughter, he's a valiant, she the pure. If an angel out of heaven brings you other things to drink, thank him for his kind attentions, go and pour them down the sink. Tea is like the east he grows in, a great yellow mandarin, with urbanity of manner and unconsciousness of sin. All the women like a harem at his pigtail troop along, and like the east he grows in, he is poison when he's strong. Tea, although an Oriental, is a gentleman at least. Cocoa is cad and coward. Cocoa is a vulgar beast. Cocoa is a dull, loyal, lying, crawling cad and clown, and may very well be grateful to the fool who takes him down. As for all the windy waters, they were rained with like tempests down, when good drink has been dishonoured by the tipplers of the town, when red wine has brought red ruin and the death dance of our times. Heaven sent us soda water as a torment for our crimes. I'm glad that tickled one or two of you. If you didn't recognise that, it's a poem from G.K. Chesterton. And we are going to look at his life today in History Makers Part 3. Gilbert Keith Chesterton. Philip Yancey, in his book Soul Survivor, speaks about, and very honestly, about his struggles with the church, with faith, with reconciling what the Bible says about those two things with things like pain and suffering and all sorts of anomalies that present themselves in life. And he's very honest and candid in his struggles as a person. And he says that one of the most profound and influential people in helping him to, at least in some part, resolve some of those loose ends was G.K. Chesterton. And he owes a lot to him for recalibrating his thinking. So the question then would be, why are we studying
Why would we bother to look at a man who has been dead for nearly 80 years, and who, when I said G.K. Chesterton, some of you said, who? So who of you this morning love to read books? Three of you. Great. No, it's more than that. who of you have seen a BBC TV series called Father Brown? Same. Two or three. So Father Brown is actually a creation of G.K. Chesterton. So in answering the question, why would we bother to look at this man, let me just say a few things, and then we're going to look at some of his quotes. The first thing I want to say to you is that in the 20th century, G.K. Chesterton was the greatest writer. And I think because he was the greatest writer, he was also the greatest thinker. He was the greatest thinker of his time. And I think then, because he was the greatest writer and the greatest thinker in the 20th century, he is also the greatest thinker and remains the greatest writer in the 21st century. His work outlives him, because there is no one who has eclipsed his intellect and his capacity to encapsulate the world and communicate it in a way that is compelling. Last week we looked at Gladys Aylward, who changed the world with her sheer determination and her grit. Well, I want to say to you that G.K. Chesterton has changed the world with the sheer weight of his intellect. He had something to say about nearly everything, and he said it better than anyone else. And still, he remains fairly anonymous and obscure to this day. So he was the greatest mind of his time. He wrote over 80 books. He wrote many, many short stories and dramas. He wrote over 4,000 newspaper essays. And if you think that that's not really impressive, that equates to writing one essay every day for 11 years. And if you set out to do that, it's got to be good. It's got to be a mixture of humour and intellect and seriousness. And it's got to be as readable 100 years on as it was the day it was first written. And that sums up his capacity to write. The second reason I want to say that he was the greatest thinker of his time, not just because he could write, but he could also articulate. He was a debater par excellence. In a day when debating was fashionable, in a day when debating would actually inform the very essence of life and culture. So G.K. Chesterton would debate many of the celebrated intellectuals of his day, people like George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, and in their own words, every time that he debated them, he would win. He would win hands down. And the irony of it was this, that his opponents loved him. He would wipe the floor with them intellectually, then he would invite them down to the pub for a celebratory pint. That's the sort of guy that he was. So why is he so obscure, and why would we bother to even think about him this morning? He was obscure for this reason. He was not commercially viable. It was very difficult to pigeonhole him as a writer and a thinker. So he would attack both capitalism and socialism, and he would say that both of those systems of economics lead to greed and injustice and a lack of freedom. He was a man who was incredibly powerful in his intellect, and yet he was deeply mystical. He was very, very difficult to pigeonhole. He was a man who stood for the common man. He defended the common man. He defended common sense. Somebody once asked him, if he was stuck on a deserted island, what one book would he want to have in his possession? And his answer was this: The Beginner's Guide to Basic Shipbuilding, of course. That's the sort of man that he was. He defended beauty. He defended Christianity. He defended marriage. He defended these things like no one before him and no one since. The third reason I want to look at him this morning is that he did all of this with an incredible sense of humour. In my day, in our day, many of my contemporaries or my colleagues have the demeanour of undertakers. And in evangelical circles, we are all really quite stern and serious. And sometimes people would describe us as being dour and unexciting. And Gilbert Keith Chesterton was anything but. He was a towering man. He stood 6 foot tall, 6 foot four. He weighed anywhere between 20 and 30 stone. And he was the subject of many jokes. He was very, very easy to caricature. And there was one time when there was, through World War I, a lady, a patriot of England, was disgusted to see G.K. Chesterton walking the streets of London. And she said to him, "Sir, why are you not out at the front?" And he responded by saying, "Ma'am, if you would care to step sideways, you will see that I am out at the front." Once his opponent, his intellectual opponent, but very good friend, George Bernard Shaw, met him in the streets, and G.K. Chesterton said to him, "My gosh, my friend, looking at you, you would think that there's a famine in England." And Bernard Shaw responded very quickly, "And to look at you, you would think that you've caused it." He was the quintessential mumbling, bumbling professor. He wore a cape, typically. He had a huge, shaggy head of hair. He wore small reading glasses pinched to his nose. He was in the habit of having inspirations anywhere about anything, and he would write them down, even if it meant writing down on wallpaper. One of his most famous essays was a reflection on how pleasurable it would be to lie in bed with a pencil long enough to write on the ceiling. This was the man. And in a day when his contemporaries were reflecting and arguing for a change in contemporary culture, they were arguing and reflecting on the past, the present and the future, and offering all sorts of avenues of thinking, including evolutionary thinking, including class restructure, freeing the subconscious. In all of this, Chesterton, who was the human puffing billy because he perpetually smoked a cigar, would walk in and he would defend with cheerfulness and some force orthodox concepts like original sin and the final judgment. He was an incredible man. So without any further ado, we're going to look at some of the things that he said, and I trust that they're helpful for you and also a stimulus for you to want to get to know more about this man. So here we go. Chesterton on timeless truth. And I'm actually going to read these to you. "Misers get up early in the morning, and burglars, I am informed, get up the night before. Fallacies do not cease to be fallacies because they become fashions. To have a right to do a thing is not at all the same as to be right in doing it. Moderate strength is shown in violence. Supreme strength is shown in levity. There nearly always is method in madness. It's what drives men mad. Been methodical? Amen. Don't ever take down a fence until you know the reason it was put up. Every man is important if he loses his life, and every man is funny if he loses his hat and has to run after it. On success, bigotry, and cheese. It's not bigotry to be certain that we are right. It is bigotry to be unable to imagine how we might have possibly gone wrong. The people who are the worst bigots are the people who have no convictions at all. I owe my success to having listened respectfully to the very best advice and then going away and doing the exact opposite. Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese. Till now, I set out to write a poem on cheese, but wouldn't continue till someone said please. In the absence of any who would appease, I determined not to finish my poem on cheese. You have no idea how long it took me to write that poem. It was an absolute brain drain. Now, I'm quite proud of it because it actually leaves the door slightly ajar for a second verse in the sequel. Virtues and tradition. A man seems to be capable of great virtues, but not of small virtues. Capable of defying his torturers, but not keeping his temper. Tradition means giving votes to the most obscure of all classes, our ancestors. It's the democracy of the dead. Tradition refuses to submit to the small and arrogant oligarchy, which is a political structure, of those who merely happen to be walking about. Gone very quiet. How many Baptists does it take to change a light bulb? Change! Angels' belief and forgiveness. Angels fly because they take themselves lightly. When people cease to believe in God, they don't believe in nothing, they believe in anything. Forgiving means to pardon the unpardonable. Faith means believing the unbelievable. And hoping means to hope when things are hopeless. It's absurd for the evolutionists to complain that it's unthinkable for the admittedly unthinkable God to make everything out of nothing and then proceed to say that nothing should turn itself into everything. Love and marriage, and he was married to the same woman for nearly 40 years. To complain that I could only be married once is like complaining I could only be born once. To really love something is to realize it may be lost. Love is not blind, that's the last thing love is. Love is bound, and the more it's bound, the less it's blind. And other stuff from Chesterton. I couldn't even think about how to spell miscellaneous. After writing that poem, I drained myself. So here we go. And other stuff from Chesterton. Courage is almost a contradiction in terms. It means a strong desire to live, taking the form of a readiness to die. There are two ways to get enough. One is to accumulate more. The other is to desire less. The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried. Jesus promised his disciples three things: that they would be completely fearless, absurdly happy, and in constant trouble. And more stuff. If a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. We've heard the opposite, haven't we? If a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And what he means by that is that we as people are so risk adverse that we will not try something new in the fear that we're going to botch it up. And he would say with godly wisdom, if a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. I love that because I do a lot of things badly. I regard golf as an expensive way of playing marbles. As for all of you golf fans here this morning, there are two ways of getting home, and one of them is to stay home. And I love this one. And he was a great journalist. Journalism largely consists in saying Lord Jones is dead to people who didn't even know Lord Jones was alive. Through the week, I was watching The Project, and if you watch that on Channel 10, they have some good news stories there. It's a different way of watching the news. And they had Stephen Fry on one particular night, and I don't know whether you know Stephen Fry, but he's a Blackadder fame, and Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie sort of teamed up, and in his own right Stephen Fry is a thinker. And one of the interviewers asked him or commented to him saying something like, you're an avowed atheist, aren't you? And he said, yes, I am. And then he went on to say something like, I kind of could believe in a creator, but I can't really embrace the God that's been presented to me. And I can just imagine G.K. Chesterton bowling up in his 6'4" frame, shrugging his shoulders, shaking his shaggy head and saying something like, if there's no God, then there's no atheists. I'm not sure that's the way he put it. He said something like, if there's no God, there's no atheists. Or the intent of that is to say that atheism only exists because theism exists. That there's only people who would pit themselves against orthodox belief in a God and call themselves atheists because God exists. And that would be the end of the argument. And then he'd laugh, and then he'd probably shout Stephen Fry to a pint down at the pub. He was a man who vehemently defended the faith like no one before and no one since. And Philip Yancey says in his book, Soul Survivor, he says, we need another G.K. Chesterton. I want to say that I agree with that. We need someone who has the capacity to engage with people with humour, with intellect, and leave them wondering what it is that they've heard and how profound what they've heard really is. And we don't have someone like that. We don't have someone. I said before that, you know, many of my colleagues who seek to defend the Christian faith, and by the way, as far as I know, G.K. Chesterton never preached a message from a pulpit. But he's had such a profound influence on the world and Christianity. And we need someone like him. But we need people who will read his works. You know, we live in a day and age when people are so preoccupied with bizarre ideas that books will sell on the back of decadence or sexual immorality. But we need someone like a G.K. Chesterton, and we need people who will read his books. So if you're a lover of books and you've never read any of his books, can I encourage you to at least buy one or download one? Maybe Orthodoxy is a good place to start. You see, the real test of someone's writing and thinking is the influence that they have. And C.S. Lewis, who many of us hold in high esteem, was an atheist before he read G.K. Chesterton. And he read a book called The Everlasting Man, and that changed his life. And he has influenced the world irrevocably since then. Mahatma Gandhi got many of his ideas about Indian independence from G.K. Chesterton. And I don't know whether I should mention this, but Michael Collins, the Roman Catholic Irish revolutionary, got many of his ideas too from G.K. Chesterton. You couldn't pin the man down. But here is a man who has changed history, and let me encourage you to at very least read his works and see and understand the God that you love and serve in a way that will change you, I think, forever. So, History Makers Part 3, G.K. Chesterton. I hope you enjoyed.